My name is Ian O'Neill, and this is How They Did It, a podcast where we learn filmmaking from those who've gone before us. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to How They Did It, a podcast for indie filmmakers, especially those just starting out looking to make their very first film, although anyone at any level can listen and learn. Ian David Diaz is a writer and director, but has also been a producer, editor, casting director, cinematographer, and even tried his hand at acting. He's written, produced, and directed The Killing Zone, Bad Day, and now he's written, produced, and directed a web series called Rebecca Gold, The Series. We're also joined by the lead actress in that series, Katie Sheridan, who plays Rebecca Gold. She's been acting for many years and has appeared in numerous TV shows and films, including Genie in the House, 50 Kisses, Together, The Covenant, and she's written, produced, and acted in the TV series Match Not Found. We have a lot to get to, so without further ado, here's the interview. Ian David Diaz and Katie Sheridan, welcome to the show. I'm thrilled to be speaking with you today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, listen, now, I'm gonna be honest here that Katie has to go, so we're going to concentrate on Katie for now, and then we'll come back to Ian. So, Katie, can you tell us how you got started in this craziness of filmmaking and being an actor?
Yeah, I started acting when I was quite young. It was just something that I always wanted to do. I went to see a pantomime when I was little with my dad, and we saw the show, and afterwards I was like, oh, I want to do that. I want to be, on stage. And I was about four. So it's just something that always, it's just something that I always wanted to do. It was, it's always been part of my life.
Right.
I went to local dance classes and loved singing and dancing and acting when I was young.
Wow.
So it's something that's always been with me, really.
So what was the first major thing you sort of started in? How did it transition into I'm doing this for a living?
Well, I'd done lots of stuff as a teenager. I did bits and bobs as a teenager whilst at school. So I wasn't doing it as a living. It was more like a hobby. So I'd get like an episode of Casualty, which is a soap over here. An episode of Waking the Dead, things like that. The first thing I was an advert for Variety Club, and it was at the cinema. And I filmed that, and then it came on, and lots of kids in the class came on in and were like, you're famous, you're on the cinema, But professionally, when I left college, I got a part in a Nickelodeon show as a regular, and it timed with me finishing. I was about 18, so I'd just finished college, and that was my first regular role, and we did three series of that show. It's called Genie in the House. It was a Nickelodeon children's TV show. And, we did 78 episodes of that over the course of a few years.
Wow.
So that was the first, way of doing it professionally, as opposed to just being, whilst I was at school and doing it on the side kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's always been a passion, right?
Yeah, it's always been a passion.
Yeah. Is that part of what led you to get involved in what we're talking about today, which is Rebecca Gold, the web series?
Yeah, I mean, basically, yeah, everything that I've done has come from a place of wanting to perform and act. And how that Rebecca Gold came about was that I met Ian, I think we met for an audition, wasn't it? Was it something like an audition, Ian?
I can't remember.
There was something I'd gone up for, and I met Ian through that. I think it was some sort of advertisement he put out. And we got on really well when we met up for coffee to talk about, potentially doing something together, and we became friends. And then during the course of that friendship, Ian said to me about, I think I was going through a bit of a dry patch. This was about 7 years ago. I was like, it's a bit dry. And Ian was like, I'll write you something that we can work on together. And that was Rebecca Gold.
I lost you a little bit there.
You lost me there?
Yeah,
sorry.
And you ended up with Rebecca Gold out of that.
Yes, yeah.
Wow. Well, you did a fantastic job, I have to say, because I've seen the series and you were wonderful. Just wonderful.
Oh, that's kind. Thank you.
Oh, it's not kind. I'm being honest. I would not blow smoke up your ass. Trust me. You are really good.
That's
Canadian
saying.
how, uh, How difficult was the shoot for you, Katie?
There were difficulties that we encountered. You know, it was fairly, you know, we filmed it on a modest budget.
Right.
And whenever you film something low budget, you're going to hit problems along the way. Probably one of the biggest challenges for me was that the character was really different from anything I'd done before. So it wasn't, it was a character I had to work on. You always work on a character, but it was a character that required more of me to be someone else. Sometimes you play characters and they're really close to who you are.
Right.
And Rebecca Gold isn't. So that was more of a challenge for me. Some of the action stuff was more of a challenge, as Ian will probably tell you, because I'm really clumsy. So some of the fight stuff, like I had to throw grenades, I broke them, I had to do stuff with the gun, I had trouble, like I couldn't even, so stiff I couldn't cock it, like the gun. And they had to, you know, sort that out. And so that was a challenge, like doing the physical stuff. But it was part of what attracted me to the part at the same time, because it's nice to play something different. It's nice to do things that challenge you. So those things that made it challenging also made it appealing at the same time.
Right. And the action scenes you talked about, which, wow, you did a great job.
Oh, thank you.
Like, you, it was seamless. It really was. I believed it. So,
yeah.
I mean, how long did it take you to sort of get yourself prepared for that?
For the physical. I mean, it was more, we didn't really have, we had a stunt guy on set, and he was really great. We didn't have rehearsals for the stunt stuff. It was all just, you know, turn up on the day, practice on the day with the stunt guy, and do it. But we'd had rehearsals for the acting side of it, you know, the dialogue, right. You know, all that kind of thing.
Right.
So at least that side of it kind of took care of itself. I was confident that I knew what I was doing with that because we'd had the rehearsals, so that I could then sort of focus on the more action side of it, you know, because I was doing that fresh on the day, learning that through with the stunt guy. It was fun. It was challenging. But it's nice to do, as I said, it was really exciting to get to play something like that. I liked, you know, running around with the gun. You know.
Well, you know what? If you did it on the day that you shot it, that's even more impressive.
Aww.
Man. Well, you pulled it off. Trust me. People, you got to see this because Katie's fantastic.
Aww.
You know, even if you're clumsy or not, it doesn't show. It does not show. So, Katie, what is Ian like as a director?
Oh, dear.
Ian's great as a director.
Oh,
Ian's
be very honest. Come on. You don't have to sugarcoat it.
He's very thorough. He's blunt, though. He'll tell you it as it is. So, you know, Ian's... all directors are different. And
right.
Ian's someone who will be very honest. So if you do something Ian's not keen on, he will tell you. That's not good.
And you appreciated that, I hope.
Yeah, you appreciate the honesty. Because then when you see it on screen, you'd rather have a good performance than not. Because that's the most important thing to me.
Absolutely.
To everyone involved with it is the product. He's really thorough. You know, he likes to do the rehearsals, which helps. Because not everybody does that. And it was nice because we're friends and we've known each other a long time. It was the first time we've worked together. So it's exciting to... You know, and Ian's someone who will do anything for anyone, if that makes sense. He's really kind. He's a good person. Like,
and he shakes his head no.
We'd never worked together before, and he was like, you know, he just wrote me the lead in this series.
Wow.
And was like, do it. You know, so that was a thing of faith and, you know, it meant a lot.
Wow, it was fantastic. So I'm going to jump to the final three questions I ask every guest, and I'm going to ask you because you're on your way pretty soon. So what is the biggest acting mistake you ever made, and how did you overcome it?
That question. That's an interesting question. The biggest acting mistake. I've made lots of mistakes over the years. Some are to do with confidence, maybe not having enough confidence at times. Things like that get in your way,
right.
Worrying too much about what people think about you. I would say that's probably the biggest one, is like trying to please people, where, you know, with auditions or things like that, where you go in and thinking, oh, I really want to do, you know, I want them to know that I'm good. And now as I've got older, I've kind of learned to, you know, not worry about other people so much, like focus on, I'll do a good job if actually I'm more concentrated on the role and the character's thoughts rather than having thoughts about, you know, I've got to do this good because there's, you know, these people in the room, and I've got to do, you know, I've got to impress these people.
Wow.
So I would say that's probably one of my biggest, been one of my biggest learning curves is, you know, confidence and where I place my focus. It's not my business what other people think of me.
Wow. That's some brilliant advice for people out there. it really is, because how often do even writers, directors, I mean, I'm sure Ian has thought, well, you're trying to please other people, you're trying to please your audience, but really it comes down to yourself first, right? That's great advice.
Yeah.
So what is the best acting advice you ever received?
I went to a masterclass with this actor called Rufus Shaw. He's done loads of stuff. He's in Man in the High Castle at the moment. You can see him in that. He's in Victoria. He's done lots and lots of telly and film. And he, in this masterclass, he was saying that about how important it is to bring your own personality traits to a character, because what's unique about you and what you can offer that's unique is your own essence, essentially. So although you're always playing different people and you want to have different, you don't want to play every character the same, they're not going to be you. But he was like, always bring your own idiosyncrasies, know yourself, know yourself really well, know your quirks, know what makes you, and use it where appropriate for different characters. And it's been a really useful tip.
Wow. Wow, that's great as well. Thank you very much. Well, listen up, people. That's some great stuff. So name a film or a couple that inspired you.
Okay. Dangerous Minds is one of my favorite. It's just a nostalgic film. I loved it when I was younger, and I love Michelle Pfeiffer. And when I watched it, I was like, oh, I want to be her. I want to be that woman. She's such a great actress. I love that film, and I'd love to do a role like that. And then just for fun, like Miss Congeniality is just one of my favorite films. Oh. I love that film. I love Sandra Bullock. And it's just a feel-good film. If I am ever feeling a bit low, I'll put on Miss Congeniality or She's All That, and they just make me happy.
Yeah, well, hey, listen, that's half of it. Isn't film supposed to make you happy?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You know what? You've been so kind to do this, because I know you have an audition tomorrow and you got to run. So just one last thing. Where can people find out about what you're up to?
Yeah. On Twitter, I am at K_SheridanTweet. I'm on Instagram, which is KatieSheridan3. It's in the number 3. And I've got a Facebook actress page as well. It's just my name, Katie Sheridan. Official Katie Sheridan, I think it is. And just keep an eye out for what I'm up to.
Oh, Katie, thank you very much. So I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. That's brilliant.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, good luck on your audition tomorrow.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
All right, then. Thank you.
Bye.
All right. Take care. Bye.
All right, Ian.
Hello.
It's me and you. Okay, well, you know what? That was really sweet of her to do, because she's so busy, and I'm thrilled that she was able to come in and talk to me. But now, I'm talking to you, Mr. Ian Diaz. Love your first name, by the way. So you've worked on a lot of projects, and in fact, in my intro, I mentioned The Killing Zone, Bad Day. You know, you've written, you've directed, you've been a casting director, an editor, a producer. You've done so much in this business. But what I really want to talk about today is Rebecca Gold. But before we get there, it's the same question for you that I asked Katie. How did you get involved in this craziness, this filmmaking insanity?
I started as a graphics artist when I was a lot younger. I used to work for a company, a post-production company, and I did graphics. I did, I don't know if you know, of a show called Top of the Pops.
Oh, yeah.
I used to do the titles for that. I used to do titles for football. When they play football, the titles will come up with the names of the players. I used to do that.
That was you.
Well, I didn't do all of them.
Yeah, but you did some of them.
Some matches. And then the reason why I joined the post-production company is because they had a production company next to it. So I thought I'd join and then try and sneak into the production. But it never happened. The door was always closed. So I was sitting there one day and thinking to myself, I'm not on the right path.
Ooh.
So what I did is I quit. I quit my job. And then I decided to go freelance as a director. I had a few jobs, and then suddenly I was unemployed.
Wow.
And I was employed for 5 years. Really, really poor, collecting government's tip, in other words. And then one day I had a friend named Julian, and we decided to make a feature film. And, you know, it was kind of like, how are we going to make this feature film? Because we don't know anyone with money. So we decided, I think, as I said to in this other podcast, I think we were the first people to do crowdfunding. I think it was 1995.
Wow.
And there was this magazine called Loot in England, and it was free. It advertised for people who want to share flats or whatever.
Right.
And you know how much it cost to put an advert in a newspaper? Oh, it cost a lot. So we didn't have any money. So there was this magazine called Loot, and we put an advert in Loot, and it basically said, you know, if you want to be part of a film production and have no experience, call this number. And then, you know, people started calling. And in those days, we didn't have mobiles. It was just one phone. So they called, and this is how we sold it. We said to them, you know, you could either go on a course and give them money and learn badly or not learn at all, or you can give us money, get thrown in the deep end and learn that way. Mm-hmm. And 14 people said yes.
Oh, come on.
£14,000, and we made our film on £14,000. The Killing Zone.
That's the Killing Zone.
Yeah.
That's crowdfunding, before crowdfunding existed.
Well, I don't know if I was the first, but it does sound like I was. Because we were before Paul Hogan. Paul Hogan did a film, didn't he, called Lightning Jack?
And yeah,
he,
yeah.
He put it on a stock exchange, whatever, and he crowdfunded. That was one of the very first movies to be crowdfunded. But I think we beat him.
You so, did. Oh, my. That's crazy. You called. People called, and you basically said, give us money. And you'll learn.
Yeah, and learn. Get thrown in the deep end and learn.
So instead of you paying them to do the job, they paid you to learn.
Yeah, more or less. But
that's fantastic.
It goes hand in hand, doesn't it? They get something, we get something.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how it worked. And so we did that, and we shot it on Super 16. We were shooting.
Oh, man.
Because, you know, shooting on film is very, very difficult.
Oh, yeah.
So easy today. People have got their phones, even when they've got like a red camera, you can see automatically see what you're shooting. In those days, you have to take the mag off, you know, put it on the reel, put it in a bag, you know,
so they know
make sure it's in a car and it drives to the lab and then it goes in the bath, you know what I mean? And the next couple of days you've shot. So it was very, very difficult to shoot The Killing
Zone. A lot of the funds that you raised, or a portion of those funds, would have gone to the film stock and to processing.
Yep, yep. And we had a lawyer that was one of the people that invested, and he put in $2,000.
Wow.
So he took care of the paperwork. So it was the hardest thing I ever did in my entire life. But I learned so much doing that film, The Killing Zone. And it won an award, and the idea was, because I made a short film called The Interrogation, which cost me £3,000. So I thought, you know what, if that short film, which was 20 minutes, cost me £3,000, I can make two more and try and make it 90 minutes, then make a feature film. But obviously it didn't work out that way, because making a feature film is a different kind of animal.
Oh, it is.
But that was basically the idea. So it was three stories in The Killing Zone. And so the idea was that if the crew couldn't work all the way through, they'd work on one story.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the actors won't be locked in for 2 weeks of the shoot. They'll be locked in for a few days.
Right.
It's a story. And then they disappear, and then another story starts. And we only had one actor that went through all the three stories.
Oh, man.
So we created it so it was economical to do. And it was easy for the cast and crew, because we had three different sound people. We had you know what I mean? So it was well thought out.
You thought it out from the beginning and worked it right through to the end. That's just brilliant.
Well, it was considered madness at the time. it was crazy. It was a crazy shoot. It really was a crazy shoot.
You were a trailblazer.
It was terrible.
Oh, no, but no.
You know, it did okay, yeah.
Well, you've gone through a lot of work, and you've brought yourself to Rebecca Gold. And I have to ask that if you could just give a short description of Rebecca Gold, what it's about.
It's basically about an assassin who, on a job, meets her high school crush, and then she goes rogue to protect her because the rule is that, you know, you can't leave any witnesses, basically. So that's basically the concept of Rebecca Gold.
When did all that take shape? Like, when did you start thinking about this? And why a web series and not, like, go to TV or film?
So basically, how it started was I went to lunch with Katie.
Right.
And she was moaning, as she said. She was moaning, she was going on a bit like she couldn't. She was getting parts, but all she was getting is ads and stuff like that. And then I said to her, look, okay, I'll write something for you. I'll write something for me and I'll write something for you. And if you've ever met, I don't know whether you meet her, but if anyone has met Katie, she's very, very, she's a very small woman.
Right.
She's like 5 foot, nothing. And she's tiny.
Yeah.
Very, very beautiful, very, very pretty. And no one would cast her in this role. You know what I mean? The chances of her getting a role like this would be very, very slim. So it was a challenge for me to make Katie, you know, come across as a killer in the film. And it was a challenge for her to take on a role, because the only part she ever gets is the role, Jackie's role, I guess. They would cast her in Jackie's role, but they never cast her as, you know, someone of that ilk. So it was a challenge. And I never do anything if it's not a challenge, because what's the point? You know,
it's more fun that way, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's how, I guess that's how that started, really. Sorry, what was the question?
That's how it took shape. That's how you started thinking about it, and then you just started working on it. But why a web series and why not TV or film?
Okay, because, all right, so I've made 5 feature films in my 20 years of being in the independent sector. I've never been part of the industry or the TV industry or the film industry. The problem with TV is it's so hard to get commissioned editors to read your stuff. If you have a company, they have a remit that you have to fill. Do you know what I mean? So they won't read your script unless you have a production company or an agent. If the production company, if you have a production, you've not done anything with them.
Yep.
Then it's the odds of them actually taking on your thing is very, very slim. That's one of the reasons why I didn't go for TV.
You know what? You have just described what a lot of filmmakers, I mean, a majority of filmmakers are up against. And myself, I'm the same way. I don't have a production company. I don't have backing. I don't have an agent. I don't have a manager. And to get someone to read, it's next to impossible.
It is. And I think without them saying it's obvious that they don't only give attention to people that they know, but they don't give any attention to anyone else that they don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can understand that, because they want to work with, you know, it's a lot of money that's been passed by. So they want a guarantee that it's going to be made, and to take on someone new. You know, it's a risk for them.
Yeah,
I understand that totally. So that wasn't an avenue to go down. But I did send Channel 4 over here a link to Rebecca Gold, and I had an interesting conversation with one of the assistants, because you never ever get to talk to the commissioning editors.
Of course not.
And it was really surprising. She said, "We don't do procedurals." You know, we don't do cops, we don't do doctors, you know, we don't do ER, we don't do, you know, CSI, we don't do. And I said, why? And she's like, because we're Channel 4, we don't do things like that. I'm like, this is crazy. The whole world is doing procedural. And Channel 4's decided. The problem, I think, that we have with our industry is that they don't want to do the popular stuff.
Right.
You know, if you look at the films that come out of England, it's always a social comment, or they don't do anything fun. Right, it's always it's either a costume drama or a rom-com or a dirty little gangster movie.
Yeah.
You know, and or a social comment film right. about how we live. But they don't make the Avengers. They don't do Wick, you know.
Wow.
And this is what I don't understand about the BFI and the people that run the film industry. Why? And somebody asked them, why are you making, why don't you make commercial film? They said, because if we don't help the people that we support, who's going to help them? I'm like, that's such a stupid excuse. You know, how are we going to build an industry if you don't make films that people want to go and see?
Exactly.
It's crazy thinking here.
Yeah.
You know, and they get a lot of money and they pile it into films that only, I guess, 15% of the audience want to watch. But anyway, I don't understand
that. You know what? That sounds very much like a Canadian thing here, too. The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. If it's not about a small family going hungry in Saskatchewan on a farm that's dying, no, apparently they're not going to make it.
But I don't understand that kind of logic.
Either do I.
I mean, yes, you got to support art, but... because it's the same, because England mirrors Canada, right? So England, right, this is England, they're like, you know how I equate it? Is that there's two pubs, right?
Yeah.
But there's an English pub and there's an American pub. And you go to the English pub and you go, can I have some orange juice? And they go, we've only got beer. And you go, can I have some orange juice? And they go, no, we've only got beer. And you're like, oh, well, screw this. And you go to the American pub and you go, can I have some orange juice? And they go, what kind? We've got three kinds here. Do you know what I mean? That's the American industry, and the British industry is stuck on a loop. And same thing with Canadian
Absolutely.
A loop. They're too busy about wondering about the rules or what is it? What they're under, the remit, the channels and things are under. Instead of freeing it up and saying, "You look, you know, we should be," because England, right? They say we have an industry, but we don't have an industry.
Right?
We don't. The Americans come over, they use our technicians, they spend all that money. We're just a service engine for them, and then the money goes back to America. It doesn't come back here. We don't have a star system. Canada doesn't have a star system. No. Canada does not have a film industry. UK doesn't have a film industry, and it's crazy because we are well capable. Both countries built a star system and an industry.
Absolutely.
The people that are in charge will allow us to make films that people want to go and see.
Want to see. And it's funny how, you know, our stars become stars when they go to the States.
America. Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? It takes them to cross the border before they can become a star.
In the 40s, when Rank was around in England, they were very, very big in the film industry, and they had contracts that held actors here.
Really?
Like America did.
Yeah.
And that's what they should be doing now. They should try and create an industry and hold the actors here, you know, so that we can use them, their popularity, to build upon.
Oh, man.
And to make an industry.
This is some great stuff. I love this conversation. Seriously. Somebody has to say it, right? Somebody has to say this is not working.
There are a lot of people that are scared to say it.
Yeah.
But I have nothing to lose because I'm not even in the industry.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. So, you're on the outside looking in.
Hmm?
You're on the outside looking in. And you know what? So, and here's your solution, which I love, which a lot of people are doing, is you take your own work and you make it yourself.
Yeah. Well, this is the reason why, just coming back to your next question, this is the reason why I haven't made a film or a TV series. One, you can't, there's no point in going to TV because they can't see your work. Two is with films, right? If you make a film off your own back, the only things that work is horror, I guess. If you make a really good horror, they'll be all over you. But it's very hard to make a really good horror.
Yeah.
We don't have any money. But if you make an independent film and you don't have a star, distributors are not going to be interested. And then if you make, if a distributor is interested, you can bet your bottom dollar they're too small to put your film out there. And all they want is loads of films on their catalogue so they can show everybody they've got loads of films. And they do nothing with your film.
And guess what? Your film gets lost.
Yeah, exactly.
What film do they put their priority behind? None. Just is on a list and nobody's being pushed forward. No one's being worked on. Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy.
What I don't understand is, with distributors, why can't they work together with the filmmakers? Why can't, because it'd be better for, on both ends, you know, work together with the filmmakers, you know, try and figure out what's being sold around the world, try and make that the best you can with the little money that you got and try and push it.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that? Why do distributors have to be thieves and steal your money and lie to you? And, you know, because I've been through all that stuff.
Oh,
you know?
Man.
It's crazy, right?
It is insane. Well, and that brings us back to Rebecca Gold, which you did on your own. And I have to ask myself, how did you fund it?
Okay, right. So I work for a Canadian producer.
Oh.
Right? In Toronto. And yeah. He basically is a lawyer.
Yeah.
And he hires me to direct sensitive cases, you know, so that he can show, like, he's got students, so he can show them a dramatic, you know, a dramatization of what's happening in the case so they can learn, right?
Oh.
So he hires me to do that. And I've been doing that for a very long time. And I can't show anyone in it because it's classified, sure. And I have to get rid of all the stuff in my, which is annoying because some of the stuff that I've shot for him is really good. So so he pays me very well,
yeah.
And I put money aside, and I made Rebecca Gold. So the way we made, he actually put some money into it. He's one of the producers on it. He's a really terrific guy. His name is Barry Smith. He's a lawyer. He basically financed half of it, which was really nice of him. He pays me a lot of money to do that, and I put money aside to make Rebecca Gold. But it took me a long time because I'm working in between. So me and Katie, you know, we shot it over weekends and it took us a year to shoot.
Wow.
So even though it's only like 28 minutes.
Yeah. Wow.
But I didn't want to make a web series that everybody else was doing, because a lot of people can do 28 episodes because all they're doing is shooting in their living room with friends, or you get, you know, actors that shoot stuff, you know, about struggling actor.
Right.
And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to make a TV show.
Right.
On YouTube. So that's what I set out to do, to shoot it just like a movie or like a TV show. And that's what I did. But I knew that I didn't have enough money to stretch it that far. And I knew that people's attention span is very short. So each episode was quite short. So like first episode's 5 minutes, I think second episode's 7. I think the longest episode is 9.
Right. So I think that's the last episode.
Yeah, I think the last episode's 5, 9.
You know what? Yeah. And that's the way I watched it. I didn't watch it in that sort of condensed version where you put them all together. I wanted to watch it as a series, and I wanted to see how you would get me to watch the next one. That's why I watched it as a series, and you did a great job, because it's like, damn, I've got to see how it goes. What happens next? So I went to the next episode. It was great. It was great. Wow, I really enjoyed it. So what did you shoot on?
Okay, we shot on a we didn't have enough money, so I got a Sony FS100.
There you go.
Yeah, so it wasn't shot in 4K. It was just shot on 1080p, and that camera has a 35mm sensor, so you can put different lenses on there and stuff.
Right.
So that's what I shot it on.
You shot with what you had.
Yeah, exactly. What we got. So, you know, I mean, it's where can you? Nobody's going to give you any money, so you've just got to work around it. So. And I know every trick in the book when it comes to low-budget filmmaking. I can make a low-budget film with, like, 5 pence, basically, because I know every trick in the book. And throughout the years, I've learned it. So,
Someone should be writing a book.
I have a thing about that when people teach and stuff, because you see loads of this stuff on Facebook.
Right.
And you see people going, you know, tune in and, this is how you make a, you know, a low budget film of blah blah blah. And 9 times out of 10, they're always asking you to say they want your email address. So
link to this thing,
and then you'll be able to see the seminar and stuff like that. So they want your email address, because that's like, you know, and I always think to myself, you know, if these people were so good at their jobs, they'll be making features, they wouldn't really be, you know, teaching, even though, you know, people appreciate that they do that.
Yeah.
And there's some really good ones out there, like Film Hustle.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I like guy at Film Hustle. He's terrific.
Alex Ferrari, yeah.
Alex Ferrari's he's the Don, man. He's the Don. He's really, you know, terrific.
He's been on this show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, I've talked to him. He's amazing.
You can feel the passion from him, can't you, when he talks.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I listen to his podcast all the time, and I love his stuff.
Yeah.
I wish I can go on his show, but...
Sure you can. I'll send him an email about you, and I'm sure he'll be contacting you. Hey, we're always looking for guests. Everybody is. So,
right.
So trust me. And when you get somebody like yourself who just said all this great stuff about, you know, making your own films and why you're doing it and making your own series, that's what people need to hear. Especially you use what you have. You hooked up with a friend and you said, hey, I'm going to write something for you. And the great thing about it, to be honest with you, is that it's a strong female lead. We need more of those.
Yeah, but if you look back on my history, this isn't the first time. Bad Day has two female leads
in it. That's
and
right.
And a black lead.
Oh,
and that
man.
Was made, you know, 10 years ago.
That's right.
Fallen Angels is mostly female leads.
Yep.
So, before all this nonsense started with feet, whatever, I always thought that women were getting the bad end of the stick, basically. So I decided to write stuff for, and I love writing for women. I mean, obviously, there's like a bit different take now on that whole situation.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get into that, but if it's done right, you know, if a woman's character's written right, then you would accept it for what it is.
Well, the great thing about Rebecca Gold, from my perspective, is you've got a flawed character.
Yeah.
But it's because it makes her human.
Yep.
Makes her and yet she struggles to do the right thing.
Yeah.
It's just wonderful. I really, you hooked me on to it. So when's more? We getting more?
I'm writing season two. It's just trying to find the money to do season two.
Of course,
you can't just make something. You've got to top the first season, haven't you? You can't. I can't just do the same thing. So, and that, this is the problem. Is trying to find people with money. You know, you know what? I just wish there was somebody that would just, you know, do something kind and just give me some money.
Have you thought about crowdfunding for this?
I'm thinking of doing it, but you know, crowdfunding doesn't really work very well. Even though Rebecca is, as far as I'm concerned, Rebecca Gold is it's a good piece.
It is.
Right. But it's only got 655 subscribers and, you know, each episode's got over a thousand. It's not breaking the bank, put it that way. The reason why it's not doing that is because I've slammed up against my social media wall, and I don't know where else can I go.
Yeah.
And I think it needs something, like, this is the reason why I want to do some podcasts. It needs something to go past that line.
Right.
So more people will know it's out there.
Well,
you know?
Here we go. So listen up, people. Go to YouTube, look up Rebecca Gold. Enjoy yourself, because it's fantastic. You know, you talked about what you shot on, but one of the things that I was impressed with was the sound. You did really well on sound.
Because, right, as I said to you, I know every trick in the book, and I know when I'm shooting stuff that sound is just as important as the picture.
That's right.
So when we hired a sound guy to do it, and a lot of people don't do this, I don't know why, plug into your camera from that sound guy's mixer.
Right.
Know, because who wants to be sitting there syncing up the sound, you know, when you can just pump it into your camera. And then you have two. You have a backup,
right,
the stuff he's recorded, and then you have what's on the actual recording itself.
Yep.
So you have two. Second thing is there's a trick that you can do, which a lot of people don't do, which is basically if you're shooting something for the day, towards the end of the day, you schedule in a read-through. So everything you've shot on that day in that script, you put, when you go cut, thank you very much, that's a wrap for this day. You tell everybody to shut up and you make the cast sit down and you make them read from the script and do the same performance. So the reason why you do that is because, right, when you're in post and the sound is bad, or the sound recorder you actually hired wasn't very good at his job and you didn't notice it, you take that sound, okay, and you put it over the picture. Okay, right, so it will drift out. But when it drifts out, you cut back to somebody else and then bring it back in line. And then, because that will get you out of a lot of trouble. In fact, if you look at Rebecca Gold, there's a scene in the kitchen with Hamilton and Jeannie. And the majority of that scene, that majority of that scene was through the read-through, was the sound through the read-through, because the sound was too low. There's a few lines that we used, but you can see how well it works because they've just gone through it. You know what I mean? The actors have gone through it for a couple of hours, and then, you know, and then they remember the performance, plus the tone of the area that they shot it is going to be the same.
Right.
So that's...
Oh, man.
That's the tip. And that really works. I mean, surprisingly enough, it really works very, very well. So you get clean sound, clean. And so you save money in ADR.
Yeah, you get the same room tone. You don't have to do room tone because you've got it if you do...
Well, you still will do room tone.
Yeah.
But yeah, for it's the same tone. So if you have to pay for ADR, they go and they record and then have to find, you know, fine tune it so it will suit that sound, whatever. This way, it's kind of done, really.
Wow. Okay. You know what? That's awesome. I've got to remember that.
Yeah. If you don't have enough money to have ADR, do that.
Wow.
You know, it works.
Well, that could have saved my ass on my first short film. Like, you have no idea. Oh, my God. It would have. Because the film was ruined by bad sound. And that would have saved everything.
What makes me laugh is that sometimes you get sound people in, right? And because we weren't paying anyone, right? Mm-hmm. So we get some sound people in. One guy came, you know, you get some sound people. I'm not saying the guy that worked in ours because he was all right. And you see they got a directional mic and they're pointing at the floor. And you're like, why are you pointing at the floor? Oh, okay. And then they point it at their head. And you're like, well, the sound's not coming out of the head, they're coming out of the mouth. Why aren't you pointing at the mouth? You know, and it's really quite puzzling how these people are working. I don't know how they could be working if they're working this way. So, you know, to be an independent filmmaker, you've got to know every facet of every job that's on the set. And fortunately for me, I do. So
so that it shows. Like, you've got a little history on all those different positions. So, I mean, you're taking what you've learned and putting it into Rebecca Gold. So I asked Katie before she left what kind of director you are. What kind of actress is Katie? What is she like as an actor?
Okay, so I'll never say this to her face, but Katie is a brilliant actress. She really is. How should I put it? She's incredibly talented, but she doesn't know it. That's the thing with her. She doesn't know how talented she is.
Hmm.
She can express a mood without saying a line, which is half the job, really. And I really needed that through some scenes. You know, there were some scenes in it where it was just voiceover, and it was just her face, obviously. So she had to express that voiceover. Even it was read by somebody else on the set, so she had to express it, and she did it very well. And She's very photogenic, and she knows her craft very, very well, and you know, I appreciate the friendship and I appreciate her her talent
and her commitment too. There's a lot of commitment to this, isn't there?
And you know, I understand. You know, there are other jobs. You know, that like she, you know, some of the days we arranged to shoot and she couldn't do it because she was doing an ad. We had to cancel everything. You know, but you can't say anything because obviously she's not getting paid.
Yeah,
nobody else is getting paid. So, you know, you just have to roll with the punches, basically.
It's amazing that you know what, this isn't a testament A to your friendship, but also to the material that is Rebecca Gold. So, I mean, obviously she wants to do it because it's good.
I'm assuming so.
Oh, I
can't second guess her.
she wouldn't do it if it wasn't good. Seriously. She just wouldn't.
Yeah, I guess.
And she's and to be honest with you, I think she makes it better.
She does make it better. I mean, when I was writing it, when you write a character, you have these things in your head thinking they're going to be this, going to be that. But experience tells me that
Lost you a bit there. I lost you a bit there.
Okay, what bit did you lose me at?
So just what when you're writing it.
Okay, so when you're writing it, you have these different ideas of how the character's going to be.
Right.
But when you put an actor into the role, it changes because that actor's bringing their essence to that role. So with Katie, I'll tell you a reason why. I wrote it for her. When I was thinking about the character, I was thinking, Katie looks so young, right? She's kind of like in her 30s, but she looks really, really young. And she looks very, very innocent. So I worked that into the script because, you know, she only has the memory of herself being 17. She, you know, every time she does her job, they take that bit of memory out of her head. So she doesn't remember it and stuff, and she keeps going that way. So the idea is that her attitude towards life and her demeanor has to look young, has to feel young.
Right.
And I think she actually achieved that without even trying. Because that's who she is in real life. So
wow. Have you thought about and we're talking about the next sort of season coming up,
yeah.
right? Have you thought about doing a pay-per-view kind of thing, or you know what I mean?
On
demand.
Well, it's on Amazon. Some people pay to see it on Amazon.
Really,
Amazon Prime. Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime. And I'm quite surprised it's on Amazon Prime. To tell you the truth, but I don't think we've got a big enough audience to do that, to pay for it.
Right.
As I said, right. Listen, we might do because there's no way of telling, right? How much, you know, how many people have seen it because it's on Amazon, it's on YouTube, it's on Maddie GTV, which is the distributor. It's on this channel called On Channel. So there's no way of telling how many people have seen Rebecca Gold. I really don't know. I can't answer that question.
Yeah, you're not really sure if you want to take that step or not.
I'm going to look for sponsorship and try and figure out how that works. Nobody ever tells you how that works.
Yeah.
And if they do know, they won't tell you. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Because you know what? It's getting on the phone and asking people. You know, tell them to look at the first season, share that with them and say, okay, you know, we'll put a big logo on the back end of it and you give us a bunch of money.
Yeah, but the problem with that is you know, if it's not pulling in a million,
right, views, right,
then you know they're not. Yeah. Well, they're going to say to you, "Well, why? Why should we? Yeah. How many have you got?" And this is the problem with Rebecca. All we need is someone to I don't know, just be kind, basically,
and to believe.
Yeah.
Just believe. Yeah. Well, that's the problem with this podcast, too. Believe me, I've tried to get people on, but there's not a million people listening to this. So, but listen, you've already told us where you can see Rebecca Gold. You just put a whole list of them there of where people can see it. I saw it on YouTube, but there's a whole bunch of other places they can see it. And I urge people, you've got to see this. It's a lot of fun. Seriously, Ian, it's a lot of fun.
Thank you.
No, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, and I think other people will too. So here, the final big three questions for you, sir.
Oh, good.
So what is the biggest filmmaking mistake you ever made, and how did you overcome it?
Okay. I'm looking. okay, right. So I think I've made a lot of mistakes.
Everybody does.
Yeah. And I think, I guess we need to embrace it. Because it's the only way to learn. It's the only way to step forward, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so, but I think the two mistakes I made was relying on people in the past. This is the mistakes I made in the past, was relying on people. You know, relying on people to help me get to the point where I want to get to and not relying on myself. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes I've actually made. And not believing in yourself at one point, you know, as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
So,
well, we all get down on ourselves, right? I mean, when I started out, I asked you how you got into this craziness, this madness called filmmaking. There's something wrong with us because, man, it is not easy. It truly is not. It is not an easy journey. It's a tough, tough go. So, yeah. And part of the reason I asked that question is for the very reason you said, is that we learn from our mistakes. And if somebody else can hear what you did wrong, maybe they'll think twice about it themselves. So
I hope so.
You know what I mean? That's why I'm asking the question, and a great answer too, because a lot of people don't have faith in their own ability.
It's tough when you're young.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I'm 55 and I'm still struggling. I don't know if
I
got this.
Do you know how old I am?
No.
Seriously?
I have no idea.
I'm going to be 54 this year.
There you go. See, I don't feel so bad. There you go. Well, I haven't made any features. I've made shorts, but I'm looking to make a feature. It's in the works, and we'll see how it goes. But I'm starting to put a lot more faith in my abilities, the things that I do well. And I think that's I'm glad you said what you did, because people need to hear that. They need to hear that they're good at what they do, and they got to bust their ass just like you did and learn. So thank you very much. So now, what's the best filmmaking advice you ever received?
Okay. I actually met William Friedkin. I don't know if you know who he is. Mm. He directed Exorcist.
Oh.
William Friedkin, he's a brilliant, brilliant director. This is a long time ago. And he said, when you direct a picture, because Americans and Canadians call it a picture, right?
Right.
I never understood that. Why would you call it a picture? Pictures are still image. I'm like, but anyway, such is life. he says, when you direct a picture, make it for yourself. You'll get a lot of people fighting against you, you know, trying to break your vision, producers, actors. But if you stick to your guns and compromise when you have to, always follow your vision. And that's the best advice I ever got from someone, especially from him.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I mean, that's still an iconic film.
Yeah. Iconic. That's the best film ever made. Let's face it.
Well, you know what? It is.
And he directed French Connection as well. And that's a brilliant film.
Oh, how did I not know this?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Just another iconic picture. I mean, come on. These are fantastic. And speaking of movies, name a film that inspired you. Or films.
Close Encounters.
Oh, Close Encounter?
Close Encounters was the film that made me want to become a director.
Fantastic film.
Yeah. It is a fantastic film. And you know what? It's basically a wonderful, naive film. When you look at it now, you realize how naive it really is. I mean, Spielberg, the performances are brilliant, you know, from Richard Dreyfuss to Melinda Dillon, you know, and it's beautifully directed by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
And it's just such an awesome movie. Because today, when you look at it, you realize how naive it is. You know, Roy Neary leaves his family, gets on the ship and flies off. The American government just allows the ship to land, and there's no protection. They can come out with guns and kill everybody, but they just allow them to land, you know.
True.
Take over the earth if they want to. You know? But it's a movie of its time.
Right.
And it really did inspire me as to become a director and a writer. I remember seeing that and literally being in awe at the ending when that thing came out and did the five sign, whatever it is. And I was in awe because you never seen anything like that before in your life.
True.
You're sitting there, you know, and it's an amazing movie as far as I was concerned.
The visuals were insane. They were insane for their time. Just insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the sound too was just brilliant.
Yeah. And the soundtrack, you know, is terrific as well.
Of course.
It's a great movie.
You couldn't have, for me, that was one of them, to be honest with you. I love that film. And I'll watch, it's one of those films that if it comes on, and if it's on TV somewhere, I can't change the channel. I have to watch it.
Yeah, same here.
You know what I mean? You're just drawn to it.
Yeah. The thing about Spielberg is that I never went to film school, right? So I had to learn as I go along. And I learned a crap load of Spielberg's films. And I'm so much of a geek. I realized that I was seeing things that people weren't seeing. Like for instance, the art of directing is lost today because it's so easy for people to make stuff.
Right.
Like, I give an example, right? for me, this is what directing is, okay? Right, so do you remember Jaws?
Oh, it's one of my favorites. That's a film that inspired me.
Okay, right, so Jaws, right? So do you remember the scene where, what's his name? Quint.
Yes.
And Hooper gets onto the boat, and they're ready to go out and find the shark.
Right.
And they have this shot from Quint's house, which is a window, and the shark's jaws. And right. In the shark's jaws, you can see the boat traveling the away. And so basically directing is basically showing you an image, but also telling you something that's happening. So what Spielberg was saying was that they're riding into danger.
Yeah.
Because the little boat's there and you see the teeth and the window that's and it's right. Riding into danger. So a lot of people don't realize that directing is not only about showing the actors where to go, but it's also visual media as well. It's also showing you something that subconsciously you read. This is the reason why we love films like Jaws, because Spielberg does a lot of that in his movies, and he did a lot of that in Close Encounters. And I got to admit, I tried to imitate stuff like that. With Rebecca Gold, there's a scene in it where she shoots the bad guy at the ending. He falls to the ground. Jackie falls to the ground, and she comes up to her and she offers her hand to lift to make him up. All of that's played with music. There's no dialogue there whatsoever.
That's right.
And she could have said, I'm really sorry, and she could have said, why did that bullet come out of you?
That's
she could
right.
Have said that, and then when she picks her up, she holds her hand. She rubs her thumb over her hand.
Yeah.
And then Jackie gets it. Jackie gets that.
Yeah.
She has a brush in her.
That's
so
right.
So all of that's done with no dialogue. And to me, that's what directing's all about. It's not about six cameras getting six, it's about putting that in your mind. Even though they never said it by dialogue, we did it by picture.
Right.
We did it by emotion.
It's visual storytelling.
Yeah, and that is the art of directing. That's one facet of the art of directing.
Right.
And it's lost today.
Yeah.
If you watch films today, you don't see any of that stuff.
Oh,
it's
sad.
Lawrence of Arabia, do you remember when he comes up from the dune?
Oh.
And the thing, it's like, you sit there and it's like, what is it, 5 minutes as he comes towards you? That's incredible.
Wow. Well,
the art of directing is not there anymore. I'd like to make sure it's there.
Somebody on this phone call should be writing a book. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. So listen, you've mentioned where people can see Rebecca Gold. And I caught it on YouTube, and it was, I really enjoyed it. I have to be honest.
I hope
that people listening will give it a watch, because it's well deserved. Trust me. But where can people find out about you and what you're up to?
The usual places. I'm on Twitter under the Mega Geek. At Ian David Diaz. At Ian David Diaz. I'm on Facebook. And that's really, I'm not famous. I'm not, I'm known for certain things, but, I don't have a website or anything like that. If I do become famous one day, I might have a website.
Well, maybe they could just check out Rebecca Gold, and that's how they can find out about you. How's that sound?
Yeah.
Well, what? Ian, thank you so much for being here, man.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. It's very good of you.
That's our show for today, and I can't thank you enough for spending your valuable time with me. I greatly appreciate it. I really hope that you learned something from today's episode, and just as importantly, that you enjoyed it. As always, if you have any comments or questions about the show, please stop by my Facebook page at How They Did It Podcast. I'm on Twitter at HFilmmaking, and on Instagram at How They Did It Filmmaking. Please show your support for the show by subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Thanks again for joining me, and I'll be back with another show next week. Until then, keep shooting.